This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series.
Of Portals and Portents by Leslie Herron. Chapter 21, Diopside.
Slow up, buddy. I can't...
Atlas skid to a stop, clutching at the stitch that had developed in his side. They had been running all night and sprinting full tilt for nearly half an hour as they ducked and dodged their way through the thick forest. And he was, well, simply put, exhausted.
I can't keep running.
Grunting as he looped back around, Barry shoved his massive head under his friend's arm, elevating him upright and urging him to keep moving.
Fine. Just a bit farther, then.
He made to take a step forward, but it felt like the bones in his legs were removed. Atlas wrapped his fingers around the thick bear fur to support him, and he looked around. He wasn't sure where their midnight stroll through the woods had taken them, but if they were lost, then hopefully their would-be captors were as well. As the pair plodded through a gap in the twisted oak trees, Atlas weighed their options. So far, his only plan was to lay low. The king had gone insane, but hopefully he would lose interest in this game of hide-and-seek and find someone else to terrorize. He scratched at his eye patch nervously. But what if they were captured? What then? Maybe he could reason with Eric, given all that they had been through together. But it was obvious which twin wore the britches in that relationship. He froze when he heard something rustle in the brush off to their left. He felt his friend tense up and the fur on his back raise as a low growl fell from his mouth. Atlas threw up a finger into the air, scrawling out a rune as the footsteps grew closer. He had just opened his mouth, ready to release the spell, when, from the shadows and thickets, a limping body stepped forth, dragging a rusted sword behind it. Atlas breathed a sigh of relief and dropped his hand, the rune fizzling out of existence. It was just a zombie. Ever since the real king's return, they had been patrolling the countryside in small numbers, hunting down and terrorizing the followers of the scholar. This one didn't even acknowledge him as it shuffled past. With the downfall of many of the churches, most of these creatures simply wandered around aimlessly, waiting for new orders.
Okay, come on, Barry.
Atlas nudged his companion into motion, before he glanced over his shoulder. The creature's neck gave a mighty snap as it attempted to look away, but it wasn't fast enough. There was only one reason it would have taken an interest. They had been spotted.
Run!
There was an explosion of sound from somewhere behind them as the two bolted into action. Trees being uprooted echoed out through the still of the forest, and it was headed their way, fast. The undead creature reached a hand towards them.
Stop!
He hadn't seen magic used for remote puppetry in ages, Atlas thought, as the cold realization washed over him that the king had found them. He wrenched free the dagger from his holster and sent it singing through the air, turning as it sunk deep into the creature's left eye. Barry was already guiding his friend into motion when another creature came barreling out of the twisted trees in front of them. In one swift movement, he stood to his full height and then fell back to his four paws, using the momentum to send the undead flying back into the shadows. Atlas relinquished his grip on the bear and pushed off, forcing his legs to run in the opposite direction.
Split up! We have to divide their focus!
Whining in protest, Barry started to follow, but snorted when his friend gave him the look. He changed course and tore off to the right, disappearing into the thicket.
Your game is at an end, Arcanist.
The king's voice fell from the rotted lips of yet another undead that had stepped out and caught Atlas by the neck as he tried to flee. His toes left the ground as the creature hoisted him into the air, and he was forced to watch as Elias strode into view moments later, the ancient oak splintering into pieces around him like a bomb had gone off.
I suppose it was fortunate that Still Harbor was the hub for the Brotherhood.
Countless of my soldiers still patrol this area.
A smile tracked across the king's face as he turned to his doppelganger, doubled over and attempting to catch his breath. Eric wheezed in and out, clutching at his side.
Oh, so fortunate!
He straightened up, letting out a pained groan as he jerked a finger at the minion holding the mage.
Why did we have to chase them at all? If you could just do that!
Realizing his earlier plans weren't going to work, Atlas traced a practiced glyph in the air. Self-preservation had gotten him this far. The rotting creature holding him high burst into flames, and its grip around his neck faltered. He stumbled, landing hard on his rump. He scrabbled away, his hands only able to pull him so far before his back hit a tree.
Because of that.
Laughing, Elias turned to the woods. He could feel the power flowing through him, beneath the forest and through the roots. He could sense the shade of every living thing his awareness passed through. With the flick of a thought, the thick limb of a tree bent to his will, swinging down to swat the Arcanist like a fly. But a blast of wind surged past him, snapping the branch before it could reach its target. Atlas was climbing to his feet, already casting a second spell on the heels of the first. He traced glowing sigils in the air, a massive line of text, a spell he had hoped to never use. After tracing the last rune, he bit into the palm of his left hand, sealing the ritual with blood, and the blazing shapes began spinning around him.
Back off! Try and take me, and this!
He gestured at the crimson runes around him.
We'll level everything within 10 miles.
Elias began to chuckle, but it died in his throat. He frowned. Something was wrong. It wasn't the magic. It was something else that he couldn't put his finger on. Like walking into a room and forgetting why you were there. His eyes drifted side to side, taking in his surroundings with curiosity. Something was very wrong.
All right, enough.
Eric stepped in between the two and approached the mage.
We both know you can't win. Just surrender before someone gets hurt. Friends don't say stuff like that to each other.
Just as a lump had settled into Eric's throat, a roar pulled his attention to the side to see a massive bear charging towards him. He let out a grunt of annoyance and pulled back his fist, sending a mental request to Wraith. The punch landed as Barry slammed into him. Eric's arm crumpled like he had just struck steel, and a paw the size and roughly the same weight as a boulder crunched into him so hard he could see the bear receding before his back hit something solid. Atlas stood defiant beside his friend, staring down the mad king.
I don't know what you're planning, but I want no part of it.
Elias blinked. The thing that was wrong finally clicked.
Who are you?
Chester stared at the stockpiles of masonry and lumber without truly inspecting them. The courtyard of his university had become the hub of the relief and rebuilding effort. Where there had been only trees and a large stone fountain, now was a maze of supplies and black tents that stretched on. The urgent attempts at rescue had long since ended. At this late date, there was no point. Focus on the living, he had been told. They needed to repair the damage. People could not live in the university forever. Bodies were moving around him, hauling materials away or delivering new supplies. But it didn't mean anything to him. His eyes cast over to his daughter, who was standing with Miss Ruby and her sniveling assistant by a large pile of iron brackets. She had been avoiding him. The morning's events felt so far away that it sickened him to remember how the two of them had argued. They fought over Theodore, a cure, and what he obviously felt was their best course of action. In the end, he relented. It wasn't his choice to make. But the dread that settled into him felt like a lead weight pulling him down. and the thought of smiling ever again felt impossible. Chester snapped back to the moment when he felt a warm and calming hand placed on his shoulder.
"Are you all right?"
The scholar removed his hand, folding it behind him.
"You seem distracted."
"My apologies." His gaze flickered over to his daughter, who was now inspecting the lumber for building repairs. "I received some distressing news this morning." A sad smile carved across his face as he turned his gaze up at that golden visage. "A father's worry, nothing more." The scholar turned to regard the pale woman with skin like marble, then looked down at the thick iron bands around her wrists.
"She is dying."
Chester knew he shouldn't have been surprised. He was the scholar, after all. But he couldn't keep the emotion off his face.
Yes. "A most curious creature, and not one I envy. I should have seen it sooner."
The living god began stroking the chin of his mask in thought, his regal demeanor dropping away as he cocked his head to one side.
"Crystallic osteogenesis is a complex puzzle. The number of metabolic pathways involved. I see the crude attempt to halt absorption. Not a bad concept, but not elegant. Perhaps a modified form of a calcium channel blocker. But that would only retard the downstream formation, not the initial intracellular damage. Fascinating."
Chester had seen the distracted body language before. It reminded him of Atticus trying to solve a problem on his chalkboard.
"Are you saying you could help?"
The towering golden figure snapped out of his reverie, pulling back to his full height.
"Perhaps. I cannot offer a guarantee, but my order is at your disposal. You need only to ask in order to obtain my endless wealth of knowledge."
As Chester opened his mouth, Danny cut him off. "We thank you for your kindness, but we do not require any further aid." She narrowed her eyes at her father as she stepped beside him, shoving the inspection reports into his hands. "I already have someone working on the issue. Let us leave it at that for now." She turned to the scholar. "Please." She gestured toward the remainder of the day's inspections. Chester reached a hand towards his daughter, but she pulled away. His face fell as he warred with whether he should press the issue, but he was saved the struggle by a city guard waving them down as he ran in their direction.
"Prime Minister, there's a man just arrived at the eastern edge of the city, asking to speak with you. A Captain Thorne?"
"Thorne?"
Chester's chest tightened.
"Was he alone?"
"No, sir. A whole group of people."
He glanced from the scholar to Danny. She nodded.
"Go. I'll explain the situation and we will catch up shortly."
He didn't wait for confirmation from the others.
He motioned to the guard to lead and began sprinting for the edge of the city.
Thorne should have been in West Ospria. His appearance here could only mean that the ship had crashed, just like the cyborg had predicted. The destruction had changed many of the streets, forcing them to take wide detours and prolonging their trip. Every minute was agony on Chester's shoulders, but eventually the path widened and opened out into the fields beyond the city's edge. Through the simple wooden barricade that had been erected, he could see the familiar white uniform of the yacht captain and a small gathering of his crew. They were, all of them, filthy and disheveled, but whole.
"Captain Thorne?"
The towering man saluted.
"Sir, I would have come to report to you personally, but your new guards would not let us pass."
Chester glanced side to side to see a number of the Brotherhood were leveling rifles at the newcomers. He waved them down, and they returned to their posts.
"Apologies. I see your crew, but where are the passengers? Have they already been escorted inside?"
Thorne stiffened.
"No, sir. There were no survivors, I'm afraid. Some were lost in the crash, others on the journey here."
He felt a tremor ripple up his legs and threatened to buckle him at the knees, but Chester managed to step forward.
And what of the High Inquisitor and his sister? Your adoptive children were lost to the wilds. I tried to save them, but she was a willful girl. She would not listen to reason.
Thorn pulled his hat from his head, lowering his gaze to the ground as he did.
I did everything I could. I'm sorry.
Chester closed his eyes. Two children dead, and two more dying an agonizing death.
Thank you, Captain. You can give your full report to one of my staff.
There was no ounce of sincerity in his words as he waved the man off with a flick of his wrist. He wanted to curl up in a ball and disappear.
Stations! Something is approaching fast!
Chester felt rough hands drag him backwards as a wall of soldiers rushed past to take position.
What now?
The guard who was pulling him to safety pointed to the east.
Not sure. It's some kind of creature. We need to get you to safety.
Chester's eyes focused on the distant beast. It was massive and moving fast, dirt exploding outwards in its wake, metallic scales glinting in the sun, fire erupting from its...
Percival?
The closer the creature got, the more details he could make out. The monstrous piece of farm equipment was teeming with something clinging to its body. Chester shoved the man off him as an understanding washed over him. He threw out his hands.
Hold your fire!
He began pushing his way to the front, but none of the soldiers and monks were lowering their weapons.
Stand down, now, or I will personally see that the scholar hears of your insubordination.
Weapons began to shakily lower, but not entirely. The creature was approaching fast, and the closer it got, the more horrifying it was to behold. Chester half wished he had something himself to brandish in defense. As it neared, he could see that atop its head sat a man. Well, clung would be a better word, as the man had one arm wrapped around a spine on the metal machine's nose, and the other was holding a long stick out in front of the dragon. Dangling from the rope attached to said stick was a shirt stuffed with twigs and loose grass. A scarecrow? The speed of the machine's approach was enough to cause even the Prime Minister to start backpedaling, but at the last moment, the man let go of the dangling scarecrow, and the dragon pounced, tearing into it like a dog ravaging a stuffed animal. Bodies began to pour off the back of the creature, most of them wailing in despair at the inhumanity of it all and demanding to speak to someone. Chester recognized several as Avis nobility. It was Thorn's lost passengers. His heart skipped a beat as he scanned over the numerous heads of the elite. Then he spotted them. Piper and Atticus. The boy was a beacon of excitement, while his sister looked a bit seasick. Chester rushed into the crowd, throwing himself at them.
Oh, thank the scholar you're alive!
He pulled them into a crushing hug. Piper laughed in surprise and hugged him back.
Of course we are. It's me, isn't it?
When Thorn said you were dead, I...
Piper pushed herself out to arm's length.
Oh, I bet he did. Where's that cowardly dung heap? I want to introduce him to Percy's mouth.
He grabbed her and pulled her back in.
Who cares? You're alive. I take it Vel rescued you.
Atticus shook his head.
No, we came here to rescue him.
Chester eased up on his grip, looking over his shoulder.
I thought I saw him riding on the dragon's head.
Pfft!
Piper gave a dismissive wave of her hand.
He wishes. That's Varin.
She leaned back, putting her hands on her hips.
He's some sort of prince or something, and I don't know why, but everyone thinks me a queen now.
A smile grew on her features.
Want me to introduce... Wait.
The grin faded from her as the Prime Minister's words registered in her mind.
What do you mean, rescued us? Is Gramps not with his brother?
A sudden commotion caught their attention, and they spun. A group of Brotherhood soldiers were restraining the man who looked like Vel, holding him face down in the dirt, while a second group tried to fend off an impossibly tiny little man holding a pair of knives, fresh with blood.
"Get off him, or I'll take you all on!"
Evan lunged once more, dancing around a bayonet and sinking his knife into a man's thigh. Chester rushed forward.
"I told you to stand down! What?"
The butt of one of the rifles sank into his face, and Chester fell back, clutching his nose. The soldier who had attacked him leveled his rifle on him.
"By the order of Miss Ruby, do not interfere, or you will be apprehended as well."
Chester glanced over to Varen. He had the same resemblance to his friend, minus the metal plates on his face and a long scar over one of his eyes. But there was definitely something missing. He wasn't fighting back, and instead was allowing himself to be pushed into the ground by Ruby's boot heel as a soldier clamped manacles around his wrists. Fury burned away the other emotions within him, and Chester attempted to push himself from the dirt, but a different soldier kicked him back down, leveling his own rifle.
"Enough!"
The voice of the scholar boomed with a physical pressure, silencing everyone and leaving a ringing in the air as he strode towards them.
"What is the meaning of this?"
Chester pushed himself upright as Danny rushed over, helping him to his feet.
"Your soldiers attacked my guests!"
The golden man turned to the jewel.
"Explain."
The battle maiden grinned wickedly, reaching out to haul her subordinate close. She whispered something into Charles's ear and shoved him back in their direction. Charles tittered.
"Miss Ruby would like to point out that this man, Varen Falkgrave, is a sibling of the Tyrant King. Why else would he come here if not to sow chaos in the aid of his brother? He is an enemy of the people."
Another whisper in his ear, and he suppressed a giggle.
"He is, after all, responsible for a deadly blow dealt to our numbers in the Battle of Death's Tide."
Piper shoved her way forward, jabbing her mechanical finger against the chest of the mousy man.
"He's not an enemy! He saved us, you ponce!"
Chester glanced at her. She had called him a prince, brother of the king, Elias's brother. He moved his hand across his mouth as his mind fell into deep thoughts. He didn't like the idea, but if the king came calling for the return of his city, having a bargaining chip might not be such a bad idea. The scholar turned to the prime minister.
Miss Ruby has a point. He should be imprisoned, held accountable for the lives lost that day, if nothing else. But...
He pushed his hands behind his back, staring at all the new faces.
This is your city, Prime Minister. How do you wish to proceed?
Eyes locked with the Mad King, Atlas found himself caught between morbid curiosity and the desire to flee.
What do you mean, who am I?
Oh, his head hurt. Elias pushed his hands hard against his temples. His mind was fuzzy and his thoughts blurry.
I know you. Your face. I know your face.
He winced as he struggled to recall from where. Seeing he had been gifted an opportunity, Atlas tugged on Barry and began to back away. With any luck, they could sneak out of here without...
Don't let them get away, you idiot!
Eric stumbled his way out of the brush, clutching at his chest.
We need him to fix this mess!
Fix? This was Atlas. They needed him to fix time. It all rushed back. Elias's gaze snapped up and his eyes flared purple once more. With a twitch of his hand, roots sprang from the ground, wrapping around the bear's ankle and snaking their way towards the arcanist beside him. As the vines touched the glowing shield around the mage, they sizzled and burned to ash, causing the sphere to pulse.
I told you, leave off or we all die!
Atlas danced away from the encroaching vines, threatening the twins with a point of his finger. In the moment of contact, Elias knew what the mage had done, that he wasn't bluffing. and how a simple mortal could control such power. He glanced nervously at his twin.
He tied a fire spell to his shade. If we break the barrier, it consumes him like gunpowder.
Eric wiped the blood from the corner of his mouth as he used his tongue to fish out a broken tooth. He spat it on the ground and turned his ire to his shadow bug. Wraith had let him take the full brunt of the bear's attack, protecting him only enough to spare him broken bones when he hit the tree.
It doesn't matter, remember?
It doesn't work like that, Wraith,
Eric growled as he massaged his jaw. But the bug had given him an idea. He turned back to his doppelganger.
Only one of them is protected.
Elias understood. He clenched his hand into a fist, and the forest quaked as more roots and vines shot out of the earth, tightening around the bear like massive snakes, squeezing him hard enough to elicit a pained whimper.
Stop! Fine!
Scrambling, Atlas plucked the runes from the spell, rendering it impotent as he put his hands up in a pacifying gesture.
I'll do whatever you want, just don't hurt him!
The vines had begun to drag Barry down to the earth, pinning him against the ground. He growled at his friend in argument, but it was too late. Two more shambling horrors emerged from the darkness to grab the Arcanist and were hauling him towards the king. Elias glowered.
I told you before, I just need you to perform a tracking spell.
Unless you're looking for your own blood, I can't track anyone. I may be versed in many magical spells, but I am not a tracking mage.
Not my blood.
Elias twitched, and a thin vine shot out and impaled the Arcanist in the meat of his leg.
Yours.
Atlas screamed, more in surprise than agony. The shaft had already ripped itself free by the time the pain had registered. Elias snapped the makeshift arrow free and pressed the bloody shaft into the mage's hand. His eyes flared purple once more, and in the sky behind him, the resurrected airship slowly sailed into view, coasting on a river of purple stars.
Track this, and you will be set free.
He smiled, his eyes moving towards the bear.
Do it fast enough, and you'll return in time to save your friend before he starves.
His heart dropped into his shoes as Atlas looked over his shoulder at Barry, struggling against the tangled knot of thick roots holding him tight against the earth.
What?
The bear stays put. As encouragement that you do not fail. Your recent behavior has not instilled trust.
Elias shoved the Arcanist towards the encroaching ship before turning to face his twin.
Unless you have any objections.
Eric glanced at the bear. He didn't like it, but he would fix it in the end.
No.
Elias nodded.
Then we set sail to find Atticus.
We thank you for joining us for this chapter of the novel Of Portals and Portents, Book 4 by Leslie Herron in this ongoing series available here on Tall Tale TV. You can find links in the description to where you can listen to all her books and novellas, with new chapters appearing as they are being written and recorded.
Next up on NMPR, are mutant worms out to get you? Stay tuned.
I'm telling you, they was aliens!
Knock it off.
Hey, I was listening to that.
No, Attila, you were playing with it. There's a difference.
Well, now what are we supposed to do? It's a 3-hour drive, and you banned me from playing Would You Rather.
I don't know. Talk? Enjoy each other's company?
Talk about what?
I don't know. Like, you ever wonder what happened to those two brothers we used to run with?
What, those guys? Well, I just assumed they got separated into vastly divergent realities, overthrew the local governments, then one went into janitorial services while the other became a dark mage and teamed up with his alternate self to accidentally collapse the multiverse in a wildly stupid attempt to get back together.
Classic Eric move.
Uh-huh.
Hey, you asked, man.
Yeah. Let's just go ahead and turn this back on.
Looks like the 2-5 is backed up all the way to 3-Hub. It's a real party.
Maybe we can find a podcast.